I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse Professor Martin Drum. Welcome back, Martin.
It's a pleasure as always, Michael.
Martin, a real challenge for you and I in presenting this political podcast this Friday morning. There's so much happening in the world. Do we choose from what's happening in Trump land? Do we go to the Middle East? Do we look at Ukraine and Russia? Do we look at Africa? Do we look what's going on with the Greens in politics in Australia? Do we worry about what's happening in the state? Are we going to get to net zero at some point? And then while we're worrying about all of this and wondering who Anthony Albanese's new ministry is and what they look like, we suddenly find that a 38-year-old coalition between the Australian Liberal Party and the National Party, who I still can't help but call the Country Party, has just been thrown out the window, Martin. They no longer want to do it. And then I wake up the next morning, a few minutes later, and apparently they're back together again. If this were a rom-com movie, Martin, it would be a really good one. You'd have sassy Susie Lee as the jilted lover. Then the jilted, dashing Davy Littleproud, he'd be the reluctant, rather unconvincing comeback love interest, I have to say. What's going on, Martin? Is it back together again? Is it all over? Have they done everlasting damage to their relationship?
Well, to use your analogy of the lovers, so to speak, Michael, you're talking about two long-term lovers who decided that they needed to go in different directions in their life, only to work out that the kids, the mortgage, the joint bank accounts and the like are too significant, and they're probably better off trying to make it work again. So there's a bit of that in there. They've kind of worked out that actually the implications of this might be very damaging, especially longer term, because if these two parties go off in different directions, develop their own policies, market and start selling those own policies, etc., and then somehow try and come back together before the next election, presumably, then they've got a big problem. Generally, there's the need for them to use the Nationals to appeal to regional and rural areas and the Liberals to appeal to the country. And together, they'll have enough seats to form government. So actually, they do really need one another. And that's the point.
Martin, when the big split, as it appeared, it was going to be, was announced, it seemed there were four big policy points that had taken the Nationals off on their own track. And they were, in any order you like, support for nuclear power, break up powers for supermarkets, a $20 billion regional future fund, and a guarantee for phone and internet access in the bush. And some of those you think would be no-brainers, at least the phone and internet access in the bush. But these apparently were things that Littleproud said he couldn't get commitments on from Susan Lee. And that's why they, yes, as you put it, they stormed out the door and weren't coming back. We're now told, as of yesterday, that there were meetings between Susan Lee and David Littleproud. And at the meeting, Littleproud guaranteed the Nationals would adhere to the shadow cabinet solidarity while Lee committed to fast-track consideration of those four policy demands. Can we believe what we're hearing and reading?
I think that these four policy demands were a kite being flown and a lot of other political considerations. There's an interesting point that some people have picked up, and that's that the leader of the Nationals in the Senate, Bridget McKenzie, wrote to Senator Cash from the Liberal Party. This is well before those discussions even commenced, and pointed out that they'd lost party status in the Senate and with the loss of resources. And they were really upset at the Liberals for that. And there would be some recriminations, including them standing apart. Now, you can't cite party resources and infighting as your reason for splitting a 40-year-old coalition, Michael. You've got to present something more palatable. And I think this whole, these are the policy positions we can't budge, that's a setup to try and make it look like it was policy. There's a lot of politics in this decision, not just policies. And I think that there's absolutely, you point this out, plenty of room to move from both parties on those policies. Let me give you the one area that you would have thought was hardest, and that's nuclear. So the Nats really want nuclear, and the Liberals are a little bit unsure at the moment, right? But already it seems they've come to an agreement where they'll agree to lift the moratorium on nuclear, whilst ne not necessarily committing at the moment to whether they're going to build all the nuclear reactors that they said they were going to build. Straight away, that's a compromise that probably they could both live with at the moment. So in each of these areas, it's not that hard for them to find common ground, I think. And so take the supermarkets, for instance. You have another inquiry into, the actual operations and whether divestiture, as they call it, will make a difference, and decide whether you're going to proceed. So with these, and I would think the telecommunications ones, is you said, it's a bit of a no-brainer. It wouldn't be hard for the Liberals to commit to that. There's money, of course, but I think that's pretty essential stuff for people in rural and regional areas.
Well, not everybody's wanting to see the two get back together again. I see this morning writing in The Guardian, Gabrielle Chan, who lives, I think, regionally as a journalist and contributes to a political opinion in particular in The Guardian, has an opinion saying ditching the Liberals could put the grunt back into the Nationals, Australia's rural party. And she sort of argues the case that it mightn't be a bad thing at all. It might be the way of getting the old country party back in business. You focus on what's important, and the people in the country make up about 30% of the vote, and they can really be the kingmakers. Is there something in that concept? I mean, I can understand a lot of farmers out there, old-fashioned Country Party supporters would say, yes, let's do it.
I'm not sure about this. I think that, if you look at what happened here in Western Australia, under Brendan Grylls, they said, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to go entirely our own way. We're going to produce our own policies, and we're going to negotiate with both parties after the election. And that's what they did. And they were fairly successful at the election. But it emerged that actually quite a few of those National Party members would only really countenance forming an agreement with the Liberal Party, not with the Labor Party. They had too many other things that separated them. I suspect you'll find this as well, because the National Party voters, yes, but it also is a party where there's quite a few conservatives in it, and that's Matt Canavan and the like. I would be really flabbergasted if they agreed to form a partnership with the Labor Party.
Martin, if it had gone ahead, the split, it would have been the biggest political news, as I suggested, for 38 years. You'd have another minority party in Australia, more people on the crossbench. And even if it's not going to happen, the Labor Party must be, the new Albanese government must be rubbing their hands with glee. The first big cabinet meeting will probably be spent discussing what they can do with this imbroglio, don't you think?
Well, I think certainly for even if they get back together, which I still think is the best outcome for them, there'll be 3 to 6 months of the Labor Party exploiting this for all it's worth, and every time they raise something, questioning whether both the Liberal and National parties actually really support it behind closed doors, and who likes who and who doesn't like who. So there'll be some ramifications for this, but you've got to take a longer term. The Liberal and National parties have got to plot what's going to be successful for them at the next election, not the next week. And what that means is they do actually need a unified approach at the next election, and they do actually have to work out together how they're going to approach some of those complex or contentious issues, because they've got two quite different constituents they'll need to address. They can't lose those regional and rural voters, of course, but the city voters are the ones they've lost. And that's got to be their first priority.
Well, one of the immediate things that seem to be coming out of all of this is whether the dashing Davy Littleproud, who's caused all of this, might actually lose his own job. leading the Nationals. There's another report this morning. Michael McCormack, the former Deputy Prime Minister, was asked what he made of all of this, and he said he was ambitious for the party leader. And this immediately caused people to recall how in 2018, when Scott Morrison was asked at a press conference, "Do you rule out having any leadership ambitions?" His response was to hug Malcolm Turnbull, the then Prime Minister, and say, "This is my leader, and I'm ambitious for him." It sounds like the sort of words that Brutus would use for Caesar. Do you think there's a real risk that Little Proud, perhaps not tomorrow, but in a few weeks, we'll find when the shadow ministries are allocated, he's not in them?
Well, Little Pratt will be in the shadow ministers, but I think there is actually a longer term risk to his leadership here, because of all the people and their role in this, I would say he's clearly got some egg on his face here, because he's come out and he's walked out of the coalition. He's probably going to have to walk back into the coalition. He's probably had to use some of his own critics to help him walk back into the coalition. He's held a gun to the Liberals' head. I thought they've had proper time to adequately assess and review everything they're doing. With a negotiation like that, you don't say, do all these things or else. I think that he's probably overplayed his hand. They will have to concede on some of those points, like I've just suggested. And there's a lot of bad blood that's been created there. So I would say, that's after an election performance, Michael, where Nationals didn't do badly. So, I think there's definitely some bad blood created here. And Michael McCormack's comments for me were a bit unconvincing in terms of his support. He certainly didn't rule out a tilt later on at some stage, and he might have some friends.
Well, he's also quoted as saying, McCormack, this is, that it's been messy, it's been really messy, and for people on the outside looking in, they must wonder what the hell is going on. He also indicated he'd been talking to Susan Lee, who's a friend and a Liberal, and plainly you get those heavier weights traditionally within the National Party pushing for this to be resolved. You've got the old Prime Ministers like John Howard, can't believe the coalition would come apart. So we take something like nuclear power. The Albanese government's position is pretty clear on that. They apparently in this new term really want to get into alternative energy and not at all in favour of setting up nuclear power stations. I mean, how do the coalition go about it? Do they have a very visible debate amongst themselves whether they support or don't support it? I mean, this will just drag out the last election campaign week after week.
I think they do need you do need to do some soul searching. I don't think you need to settle all your policies in the first 6 months, or certainly not in the first 3 months after an election, the policies you're taking to the next election. So I don't think there is a huge rush on this. They'll cop a bit of flak in the meantime, but giving some of their the various members and people in their party some voice or input into this would be helpful. Those members would be feeling fairly devastated at the moment about the state of their party. So I think that that's a process that they really should go through. And it's an interesting one. I think they could have a policy of lifting the moratorium on nuclear power, and perhaps some commitment to investigating options coming from the market. Because the part that I found rather extraordinary about their policy last time around is they were advocating basically a government built and government provided energy system almost from scratch, a new government built and provided energy system. This is from the party that espouses the free market and small government. So it's a huge price tag directly on government to do everything here. If nuclear power is truly viable, then surely there should be some interest from the market to see to explore it, which perhaps government could support, but that's a whole different thing entirely to what they proposed.
Martin, keep mentioning how gleeful the Albanese government must be watching all of this turmoil, and trying to understand the deeper policy or ideological settings for it all. Of course, the Labor Party has its own ideological settings, the left, the right, trying to balance everything that happens in caucus. But additionally, we've just had the election. Most of the so-called teals, the independents, have been re-elected. In fact, in Bradfield, which is still up in the air, it looks like the independent may win is ahead at the moment. Goldstein was a big question, but it looks like that's gone to Jim Wilson, the Liberal. But then you've got in the Senate, the Greens. They've done pretty well in the Senate, Martin.
We touched on this last week. Two completely opposite points for the Greens. They did poorly in the House of Reps and well in the Senate. And in the Senate, they're going to have a fair bit of say. They'll have the balance of power. They can block government legislation and agenda. And they've been forced to elect a new leader because their previous leader was turfed out of Parliament. So it is a new beginning, a new start. I think Larissa Waters is not a bad option for them. It's not about them presenting an entirely new suite of policies or changing radically the policy direction. I don't think they'll want to do that. I think they are who they are. There's clearly a group to the left of the Labor Party, and that with that comes a whole range of policy positions. But I suspect that she might change, make subtle changes to rhetoric and tone that will. Where she'll have a strong emphasis on getting things done and on achieving progressive change, which is what the Greens' mantra is about. So I think that will be, and if she's able to get that balance right, they'll keep their supporters, but they'll create a sense that between Labor and the Greens they've made effective change, which I think probably their supporters will be after, certainly Labor supporters will be after as well, and it will better advertise their case at the next election too.
When the Greens around the world first started appearing, and in Australia, they were sort of criticised for just being a Greens party and having no other policies apart from saving the environment. And these days you hear a complaint that they have too many interests beyond the environment. They should get back to their tools and just talk about the environment. Is there something in
This speaks to the fact you can't keep everyone happy in politics.
that?
You're either the protest green, tree hugging party that just ties themselves to trees and whatever, and or you're a serious and significant sort of heavyweight with a lot of policies positions across the board. But then you criticise them for just being another political party or being obstructionist, and you're exposing yourself to the fact that some people might be environmentally conscious but not support the other things that you're advocating, and that's the more the criticism they've copped more recently. So you've got to find the happy medium there. I think the environment still needs to be front and centre for what the Greens are talking about. That doesn't mean they need other policy positions, and that will be important, but I think that helps because that's their brand, Michael. That's the number one reason why still why people, it's not the only reason, but they are concerned about the environment and they see that as a really critical issue. You won't vote Green, care about the environment. Stands to reason. I think we know that much, Michael. So I think keep that front and center, but that doesn't mean you abandon other policy positions, but know where your strength is. And build off strengths. I think that's always a good policy.
I should just put a footnote in here, Martin. Wearing another hat on behalf of the Centre for Public Integrity, and you can Google and bring up their homepage. I made a podcast interviewing Larissa Waters, and it's worth a watch and a listen because it'll tell you something more about her background and perhaps help to answer some of the questions we've been canvassing just now. But it does make me wonder. We've got a new Minister for Environment, Murray Watt, a Queenslander with some sort of legal background. He's talked about bringing in an EPA, but he doesn't, you get the impression, find himself deeply supportive of what Tanya Plibersek was doing. He doesn't like the expression nature positive laws. And the question of the Woodside extension is right up for decision making, and I think by the tone of the media one's reading, the Greens are going to be very disappointed in the outcome. Many environmentalists will be. If the government was trying to get something through the Senate, and the Greens didn't like it, How would it go? I mean, who are the people that the government turns to get their legislation through if the Greens don't support them?
You've highlighted two really important flashpoints. One, the I would be I would not be surprised. I'd expect the new Environment Minister to approve the Woodside gas extension, and that would obviously enrage the Greens. And I think you're already seeing Larissa Waters come out strongly against it. And I think that's an electoral calculation made by Labor around Western Australia. And it's also a clear campaigning point for the Greens that they will be emphasising strongly. So that's your first one. The second one's these nature positive laws. I expect that they'll probably claw some of them back and probably take parts of that out of that. But you've identified a problem. If they're too watered down to get Green support, who'll be disappointed and outraged by that, and they're still not going to get Liberal support because they might be going further than we have at the moment, where the Labor government could be stuck in limbo. They either abandon the proposal altogether or they do go a bit harder to get Green support. I think they could find themselves in a bit of a jiffy there.
Martin, it's been a fascinating week. We started it out, as intimated earlier, thinking we had one of the momentous big splits in politics, perhaps since Labor Party split over sort of Catholics and communists back in the early 50s, and yet it's all disappeared. And just to finish on that note, it must be that Susan Lee's hand, probably quite against all her expectations, has been highly strengthened. So far as dealing with the coalition is concerned.
I think so, because you've got the other party that's demanded all these things away, realize that, oh, hey, there's a lot of luminaries from both Liberal and National parties going, "What are you doing? You're an idiot. Get back in the room." And I think Suzanne Ley's got some strength now to water those down and say, "Well, if you want back in, we can't deliver all of that. We might come part of the way on a few of those things, but you'll need to negotiate with us." So I expect that there'll be some that the Nationals certainly won't get everything they want from those four policy areas, which will leave Littleproud trying to explain why it's suddenly all okay to rejoin the coalition.
And finally, Martin, do you expect that she, Susan Lee, will also take the opportunity to introduce a whole lot of new faces, new talent, people with perhaps different ideas even, into the shadow ministry?
She certainly has to, and it's time for a range of other voices to become more prominent. If you look carefully, I think Dave Sharma has already come out a lot more in the media since the election. Senator from New South Wales, fairly prominent moderate. Tim Wilson's back. I expect him to get an economic portfolio, and he'll be another fresh voice in the party room. So I'd expect there'll be some changes there, and there needs to be. And there needs to be some fresh ideas along with the fresh faces.
Would it surprise you if the coalition, particularly the Liberal part of it, made real overtures to the community independents, the so-called Teals, and tried to somehow bring them into the same paddock with them?
Look, they could try. I think it'd be I'd be surprised if they're very successful, because the Teals have tried to, very robustly express their independence. They spent a lot of time critiquing major party politics. They run on clear platforms of integrity and transparency that major political parties might find uncomfortable at times, Michael. That it would be a massive about face for those Teals to suddenly roll over and join the Liberal Party. I think it would be. They'd have a lot of explaining to do to their constituents, I expect.
Finally today, Martin, we've had all of this drama. It's a little bit like everybody having a bit of fun in the playground before the first classes for the academic year set in. You probably see that sort of thing happening around Notre Dame campus from time to time. What will be the first real indications of what the new Albanese government's going to look like, what its real directions are going to be, where it might run into trouble?
Well, one in the environment, I think there'll still be some working out finding out what they do in terms of their legislative agenda and how much of that gets supported by the Greens will be a place to watch straight away, and we touched on that somewhat. I think their main agenda is going to be economic. They've realised that the reason why, one of the reasons why they made a big comeback was they really focused on other issues in the last 3 months before the election, rolled out a range of things, made commitments along those lines. So they'll pursue their election commitments, of course, but I expect that to be the primary focus that they go down.
It also seems to me, sitting on the sidelines, Martin, that the question of social housing is a huge one in Australia. It's very difficult, but there are lots of ideas out there. Do you think we're going to see a greater commitment to resolving that issue?
If they're serious about addressing the housing issue, more work to build more houses. Social housing, of course, is going to be crucial to that. But also all the things you put in place around the broader commercial housing to make that happen is also going to be important. So both of those should be really critical. If you can't find, pull the levers to improve supply, you're not going to solve the problem. So I know they've got the package that was passed late last year. That's not going to be enough. They'll need to do more in that area. And that would be the number one area I'd recommend that they focus on. If they were able to make headway there, I think they'd put themselves in a strong position.
Well, politics, I've always suggested to people, boils down to economics, Martin. Perhaps economic policy is something we should focus on before long, and have a look at just what sorts of things the Productivity Commission's doing at the minute. Are you up for a discussion on the topic next week?
Absolutely. I think that should be a focus. And we'll drive into a bit of policy detail and see what we can find. I think that would be a good focus.
Okay, well, let's get back into the library and start preparing for that. And see you next week, Martin. Thanks very much.
Always a pleasure, Michael.